Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo.
Hello there, this is Christian Corley. With me this week is Gareth Cavana. How are you doing, Gareth?
Oh, very well. You?
I'm not so bad, thank you. Now, Gareth comes on from time to time, and you know, it's not a big deal. But this week we're a little bit late recording the podcast. It's Wednesday. We usually do it on Tuesdays. No, we don't. We usually do it on Mondays. And the reason that we're a little bit late with the podcast this week, and the reason that Gareth's on board, is firstly because Brian's on holiday, so he's having some sort of sunburning experience, presumably. Then again, he's American, so I think that's par for the course. I don't know, really. And also because James and I were kind of waiting for this rumoured announcement thing, which you've probably heard about, Mr. Listener, Mr. and Mrs. Listener. So, and that's what we were doing. We're waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it, and it never came. So basically, James got into a situation where he's got a lot of work on and couldn't wait any longer. Do you hear us, BBC Wales? He couldn't wait any longer. That's a bit Michael Caine, wasn't it? So Gareth stepped in there.
It's one of our unit HQ reunions, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yes.
You know, I've been back here sort of doing the washing up with Sergeant Benton, waiting for our peerless adventurers to return for a bit of a chat.
So indeed.
Here we go.
So how's things going with, before we move on to anything else, have you got anything coming up, Doctor Who related?
Have I got anything coming up? Oh, yes. It's 6 weeks to go till we've got Philip Hinchcliffe.
6 weeks?
Down for the afternoon in Manchester.
Good Lord.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Hasn't that gone quick?
Yeah.
So that's on, I think it's the first Sunday in October, which is in, I think it's about the 4th, which also happens to be when the Tories are having their conference in town. So I'm told that there's an enormous anti-Tories march going on the Sunday. So what a double bill. Protest against austerity and the Tories, and then pop along to Fab Cafe and listen to one of the great masters of 70s Doctor Who tell us how he did it.
Are the Tories particularly popular in Manchester?
No. Manchester's peculiar in that the city council is completely run by Labour. In that they Labour have every single city council seat. It's a bit like a one-party state, but it sort of works. It's like a benevolent one-party state,
mm-hmm.
A bit like Tito's Yugoslavia. So it seems to work. So they've come here for the last few years. They really must be gluttons for punishment. Or maybe they just like coming and tweaking the nose of Manchester Labour. I don't know. But it's going to make for a fascinating coalition of people on the day.
Well, being the Conservative Party, they probably like the gay scene.
Well, they do, yes. Yes, that's true. Whether they like 70s Doctor Who, I don't know. It's one of the great mysteries. I suspect we're going to find out. If I get a load of...
if Boris Johnson turns up.
If Boris turns up, you know, maybe Boris is a Hinchcliffe man. It's possible. Or maybe he prefers the austerity of the Williams era, you know, where everything's all stripped down and it's use your imagination.
Well, that'd be Osborne, won't it? It'd be Osborne who likes that. It'll be Osborne who likes Williams.
Oh, yeah, Osborne be a Williams man. Well, Osborne will say, we should go... No, Osborne will be a Warrior's Gate man. Why have a set? I want white cyclorama. Use your imagination, children. These sets cost money. I think you're right. I think to be fair, Boris is probably enjoys the knockabout whimsical fun of Williams and Osborne, as you say, he's a Warriors Gate era man.
Speaking of Warriors Gate, have you seen this trailer for the this new Doctor Who competition?
No.
Right, so the BBC announced...
something the youths are doing.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a multimedia thing that the BBC have announced.
Youths.
On the Doctor Who website.
Okay.
Basically, what you do is you download these assets or create your own and make a Doctor Who adventure. And then there doesn't appear to be an age limit. I haven't noticed one anyway. And then the winners get to go to BBC Wales and meet Peter Capaldi.
How exciting.
Now.
8-year-old Gareth used to do this just with paper and petals.
Exactly, yeah. And 8-year-old Christian as well. I used to have a tree dis in my back garden. Anyway.
Really?
Yes, it did.
I like the tree.
Indeed, yeah. Yes.
I bet the master would have had a tree dis.
I did have it. I probably got the idea from the master's TARDIS during the 80s.
Well, there's a brilliant Tim Quinn and Dickie Howitt cartoon. You know, they used to do the little three strips in Doctor Who Monthly in the 80s. There's a brilliant one of the master shaking a tree, you know, like Basil Fawlty going, I can't believe it, I've locked myself out again. So the master did have a tree disc.
Excellent. Warrior's Gate, there's this, it's called Mission Dalek, and fans can download these assets or create their own. Yeah. And then make a little Doctor Who adventure. Now, with the trailer for this, there is what appears to be the Warrior's Gate.
Really?
Yeah. Like a gateway between two universes with Gallifrey on the other side. What appears to be Gallifrey, a large orange planet, burnt orange sky, etc., on the other side.
Fair bet. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's nice. That kind of suggests that we're not getting Gallifrey in this season then, doesn't it?
Or it's in E-Space.
Or it's in
E-Space. A bit of retcon in there, maybe explaining why the TARDIS went there in the first place.
Possibly.
I'm just trying to think of the way Stephen Moffat's mind works. There's a football in the garden, right? My daughter won a football a few months ago. It's staring at me right now, and I'll say staring at me. It's got these sort of boomerang shapes on it.
Wilson!
Yeah, it's like Wilson. He's got a big smile for one of the boomerangs, and then there's two other boomerangs going round the over the horizon of the side of the football with the two tips just about meeting the two tips of the smile that look like eyes.
Nice.
And it's orange as well, so it's orange. It's slightly malevolent. You
know, my favourite football as a kid would look this up, youths. My brother had a football in the shape of the Windsor Davis Zeroid from Terrorhawk.
Oh, really?
And that was ace. That was the most amazing football ever. It's one of them really light plastic
ones. Yes, I remember these.
Yeah. Oh, I want one of them. Yeah. So, Zeroids.
Zeroids. They were fantastic. They were the only reason to watch Terrorhawks. I mean, well, not the only reason. They were the only reason to watch to the end so I can see who won. The Noughts and Crosses game.
Yes, Noughts and Crosses. That's very true. Well, it's funny. I've been watching Never the Twain on ITV3 recently. Mm-hmm. Now that Are You Being Served has come to an end on BBC Two, which is very upsetting. But I've replaced it with the excellent Never the Twain. And Windsor Davis, you know, not only is he the standout star of Terrorhawks, but him and Donald Sinden as dueling antique shop owners are amazing. In fact, why wasn't Donald Sinden? I know why he isn't in anything now because he's dead. But why wasn't he in Terrorhawks? It was a terrible miss.
No idea.
We've gone off, haven't we?
No idea. You're absolutely right. But speaking of old sitcoms, now I record Dad's Army because I'm quite fond of Dad's Army.
Oh, nice. Yes.
And there's this new Dad's Army trailer. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I'm kind of pleased it exists, but I don't really feel the need for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's got Bill Nighy in it, the film, as well as Matt Gaetis.
Yeah, Toby Jones
and
is
Toby
great.
Toby Jones, yeah.
They all look right, but I just don't really see the point of it. It'll be like redoing Fawlty Towers with Russell Brand, rather. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, you wouldn't do that, would you? You wouldn't do that. You'd use I've forgotten the guy's name who was in Holy Flying Circus as John Cleese. That's who you'd use.
Oh, he was quite good.
He was very good.
Yes, but the TV execs won't think of that. Someone will go, "Oh, do you know Russell Brand? He's amazing. I'm told he's an enormous fan, and he's nearly got a moustache. He's perfect. Put him in. He's Basil." and then we'll get Billy Piper to be Sybil. And then we'll find someone else. Billy Piper and Sybil. You know they would.
Keith Lemon as Manuel.
Yeah. Keith Lemon as Manuel. That's correct. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And
Leslie Phillips as the Major.
Holly. Yeah, Leslie Phillips definitely would be the major. Definitely the major. So who is Polly? Jennifer Aniston would be Polly.
Oh, right. I was going to say Miranda Hart.
Miranda Hart would be all right, actually. Yeah, Miranda Hart fits that sitcom quality. There we go. If it happens, it's our fault. If this now happens, it's our fault, you realise.
Yeah. Don't we get some sort of credit if it happens?
Although part of me wants to see that now.
Yeah, Russell and Brand, we're getting into dangerous territory here because I'm kind of floating into agreement
shades
with you.
Shades of wrong.
Yeah.
It's all shades of wrong, but yet I want to see that. Oh, what have we done? What have we done? Anyway, we've gone well off piece.
We should pitch it. We should pitch it.
We should pitch it. Yeah, we should. Well, do you know, we never got any more. I love the teasers that Cleese gave for his idea for the Fawlty Towers movie in the early 80s that they worked on, which would have been wonderful. With Manuel winning El Gordo, the lottery, going out to Spain, buying a hotel, inviting Basil and Sybil over, who are now penniless. On the way over, I think someone tries to hijack the plane, and Basil, who's already wound up because he doesn't want to go, and he blows his top and single-handedly overpowers all of the hijackers and makes them take him to Spain. Oh, lovely times. But yes, yes, Russell Brand as Basil. You heard it here first.
Now, let's move on to business, as it were. A couple of things I wanted to chat to you about.
Go.
We recently issued a post called Dr. Blue.
This isn't about all the Doctor Who pornos over the years, is it?
No, Dr. Blue, as in Blu-ray. We wouldn't stoop so low. We're not Doctor Who watch. And, name check, sorry. And, so we basically, it's a post by Billy, which basically looks at the fact that the Series 4 comes out on Blu-ray at the end of this month. And there seems to be a limited interest from the BBC in Blu-ray, which is quite curious given the capacity of Blu-ray. I mean, there's no reason why an entire season...
They're moving away from physical media, aren't they?
Well, that's it. They are moving away from physical media. But I think partly they're doing this because there's a perception within the BBC that people aren't interested in owning an entire season on disc. What do you think of that?
I think that this is quite a cruel thing because I think, as the Underwater Menish proves, not everyone wants to own it on physical media, but I think there is a dedicated hardcore, probably about 10,000 people, who desperately want to own everything in physical media because they want those neat shelves in order and they want things to take along for Tom Baker to sign. And they like the solidity and the physicalness of actually having that disc in a box.
Yes.
But I think, unfortunately, they're in a minority. And I have a feeling that unless someone really understands that and cares about that market in the BBC, and I'm not sure that... And I think the way the Underwater Menace has panned out shows that there aren't people anymore in position who care sufficiently about that. I think physical media is probably on its way out. And I'm kind of in the middle to whether I like that or not. We live in a tiny flat, so, you know, part of me thinks, hooray, I don't have to find more and more Billy bookshelves from IKEA to keep stacking these things on. But part of me does quite like, you know, browsing the shelves. It's a tricky one, that.
It is. I
really have the answer for it.
I'm kind of in the middle with you, but what I think might be happening, I think because of bandwidth and download sizes and internet speeds, it seems to me that video is about 5 to 10 years behind audio. Now, what we've seen with audio recently is, you know, we've got Spotify, we've got iTunes and everything, but at the same time, we've got this new...
CDs are so old hat, aren't they?
Say again?
CDs are totally old hat now.
Well, CDs are overlooked. People are going back to vinyl.
Ah, now I'm a big vinyl man, that's right.
Well, exactly.
But do you know what's crazy about vinyl? I love vinyl, and I buy soundtracks and rare releases and albums and all sorts of great stuff. But do you know what I do that drives some of my total vinyl heads mad, my collector friends mad?
You scratch your
records. I open them and play them.
Ah, I see, right, okay.
What you're supposed to do, it's and not apparently this is what the youths are into, is you are supposed to get the download code, download the electronic media, and keep the physical, heavy gram, beautifully engineered vinyl unplayed.
Right.
And that just seems insane.
That does seem
That's like buying a Mars bar and downloading the flavours.
In what format are they? Are they in FLAC format, the downloads? Or are they MP3s?
I think they're MP3s, you know.
Well, that's utterly pointless. Because MP3 can't match the natural sound of a record. FLAC can, because it's a different format and it's more suited to the analogue sound, which is why FLAC's quite popular.
I'll tell you what, wait there. Keep talking.
Okay, I'll keep talking.
I've got the Tron, is it Tron Reloaded, the sequel?
Right, it might be.
I've got the vinyl here on my shelf. And that's got like a little code in it, and so we can answer. Tron Legacy, that was it. Here we go.
Legacy,
hang on.
Yes.
Oh Christ, it's right at the bottom of the pile. Hang on. If you hear a big crash, everything's falling on me.
Okay. Do we need to call the fire brigade if that happens?
Keep it on standby. all right, here we go. Right, Tron Legacy, music by Daft Punk. This is a lovely album, it must be said. Really high quality. And limited edition, blah blah. Wait, there it came with this little thing. Here we go. Let's have a look. Yeah, this is what I'm told by the youths. Thank you for purchasing the Tron Legacy soundtrack vinyl edition. To get this as an MP3 download, please, yes, MP3, right. Please visit the link tronsoundtrack.co.uk and place the item in your basket. Then use the code shown below during your checkout to receive your download.
Well, that seems
strange. So there you have it.
Yeah. Very odd.
So I went, well, sod that. I bought this. I'm putting it on my record player. So I did.
Good
luck. In fact, I'll watch that later. I'll listen to that later.
You can watch it as well if you stand close enough.
I suppose. Well, I like the whole sort of thing spinning round.
I like the spinning round. I like to have something to read while I'm listening to it as well.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm trying to say is I've always thought that vinyl sounds better, but I can't understand why it sounds better. But from what you're saying is, it sounds like some of the science-y boffins have worked it out.
Yes, there is a reason why. It's basically the difference between analog and digital. We don't have time for it on the podcast today, unfortunately, or indeed on any podcast, because it's quite complicated, and we'll probably put our listener to sleep. I'll explain later, indeed. So listen, this Blu-ray thing, the other side of this Blu-ray thing is, or kind of related to the Blu-ray thing, is the whole Omni rumour situation, which is, I think we can kind of all agree that the Omni rumour is not really a thing anymore, is it?
It depends who you speak to. I don't know. I think the whole thing is Schrodinger's cat, you know, in that we don't know if it's alive or dead till we lift the box. And you know, the only person who can lift the box is Philip Morris, and Philip Morris doesn't seem inclined to lift the box. So, you know, in the box could be Nout. It could be 97 episodes. If I'm being honest, I think it's probably Nout, but I'm always willing to be happily surprised.
He always strikes me as a slightly butcher but more malevolent Derek Acora when I see him.
There is a Derek quality to him.
There is, isn't there?
That is true.
Yeah.
There is a Derekness to him, but I don't know. I think it's such a tricky one. In my heart of hearts, I suspect there is probably some more stuff out there. I think there's probably stuff with collectors, and they know exactly what they've got, and they want loads of cash for it. Fair enough. I think there is also probably stuff in some broadcasters, but to be fair, he does seem to be going everywhere, so if he'd found stuff, he'd have found stuff by now. I think he probably just needs... Like I say, at some point, I guess he'll have to show his hand. Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't show his hand. I don't know. It's one of the most... I've followed the Missing Episode saga for years. And I remember I remember when I ran you, when I'd just been told the Omni rumor, which would have been about two and a bit years ago.
Yeah.
I remember I had to ring you straight away. I couldn't believe it. And I still have a feeling that a lot of that information could be true, but it was true at the time in that it was not stuff they found, but it was conjecture at what they thought they would find, and they clearly, it didn't pan out that way. I don't know. It's a tricky one. What do you think?
I think there's probably some truth to it. I don't think it can be as big as some of the, obviously, more liberal suggestions. You know, it was everything except the Feast of Stephen, wasn't it, at one point? I don't think it can be anything
I think there's no chance of that.
I think
no
possibly chance. Bits and bobs, maybe the occasional episode.
I think he's got the odd couple of bits. And I'll tell you why I think that's the case. Because, you know, having spoken to lots of people at various parts of the tree, and I won't name any names, the theory that they had come to, and appeared that lots of bits of the BBC have come to, but he's probably got orphans and bits of bobs of things, and I've got no proof for that, but that's just their opinion, which he can't show, because the minute he shows his hand and says, oh, good news, chaps, the Smugglers Part 3, I've got it, it's back, that kind of tips his hand that he's got nothing else. So that's why, if he's got orphans, he's not going to let anyone know. He's only going to let people know if he's got bigger things, and the fact that nothing's come out yet suggests that he probably hasn't got. I mean, it's surprising Marco Polo hasn't turned up, because in theory, those early stories were sold everywhere. I've always thought it's weird that isn't around. You know, something like the Space Pirates.
And Marco Polo's had a commentary as well, hasn't it? Is it Marco Polo that's had a commentary recorded that we know about?
That one I don't know, actually.
The Crusades I'm thinking of.
The Crusades. Yeah, that's weird that hasn't come out. You know, they always say, oh, the film isn't good enough quality to release, but I'm not sure I buy that, you know.
Because you can't record a commentary without watching the footage, can you? Otherwise, it's not a commentary, it's just like a recollection that's then edited into place.
Well, no, you could do a commentary. You could watch the telesnaps. And chat through it. In the same way that let's put it this way. If they had done commentaries for The Web of Fear, which was originally planned, but they didn't have enough time to do, then they would have still done a commentary for Part 3. They'd have just watched the reconstruction.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The Omni Room is amazing. It's fascinating, because it'll never be solved. In a strange way, this will sound really weird to some people, but I'm actually quite grateful that there's a lot of stuff missing, because it's given us stuff to talk about and imagine and wonder what it was like. And then occasionally when we get a little piece back, you know, it means that we can reappraise these things. You know, had Enemy of the World always existed, it'd be a story that no one talks about. Because it was missing for so long and it came back and actually it turned out to be surprisingly good, I think it's now held in high regard.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Tomb of the Cybermen still didn't exist? That's a show that we would only have photos for. We wouldn't even have any clips of Tomb of the Cybermen. That would be the ultimate what if. And yet, because we've had it now for nearly 25 years, it's kind of like, you know, it's like no one really talks about it. Very strange.
It is strange. Listen, it's interesting that you mentioned Web of Fear, because this week we've seen a revised schedule from Candy Jar for their Lethbridge Stewart series.
Oh, yes.
There's been some delay with David A. McKinty's The Schizoid Earth due to some personal incidents. That does mean that things are being rescheduled, so that's now coming out on September the 25th, followed by Beast of Fang Rock, which is by Andy Frank and Mallon, based on a story by Terence Dix, for October the 23rd, and on November 20th, and I'll re-say that because I think I mispronounced it, on November 20th is Mutually Assured Domination. I think you can probably guess, dear listener, who that one's features, the Dominators.
Oh, yes.
Just in case you weren't listening. By Nick Walters. Now, this is all very interesting, but I think what's most interesting for me, anyway, and I dare say for you, Gareth, is the revised artwork on the Schizoid Earth, which
Oh
features
yes,
some of
super
Abe Salmon.
Adrian that.
Yeah, and then there's the entire cover for Mutually Assured Domination. They look grand, those covers.
They're brilliant covers, and you know, I must admit, I'm thrilled to see Adrian back, because I was chatting to one of the guys who works tangentially on the range, and we were talking about cover artists, and I said, have you not tried Adrian? And he said, no, I haven't. So I handed over, you know, so I asked Adrian, and I passed over his details. So I was, and heard nothing more. So I was thrilled that they've used him. And I think it's a, Schizoid Earth's given it a real lift, the new art. Although it's a shame it's still got that very strange helicopter in the back.
Yeah, the original art felt a bit kind of like the brigadier or brigade leader character was a bit Sergeant Peppery.
Well, he was
originally,
cross-eyed, wasn't he?
In the original one, yeah, it was all kind of not quite right, but it looks really good now.
Yeah. No, you need the artwork's crucial to these ranges. You know, I mean, it's something we've talked about before. You know, but I, growing up in the 80s, the cover artwork was what would persuade me to buy a game on the Spectrum half the time. You know.
Oops.
Ooh.
Sorry about
Is
that.
Is that a little organ?
Yes, it's I've got Terry Jones in the background.
Yes. No, I think Adrian's done a great job, and especially on the Dominators piece, because Adrian's original Dominators time team, which is one that I've got in the vault, and it used to be on the wall of the lass, I think it's one of his best. I think he really got the essence of, you know, of the Dominators in that original time team piece, and he's just run with it with this.
Yeah.
It's made me very excited for a book that I wasn't very excited about. So
yeah.
Good work, Adrian.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, just going back to the '80s, there were some absolutely dreadful Target covers, wasn't there?
Yeah, it must be said. Gosh, what was the what were the poor?
I think Terminus was quite a bad one.
Adverts of Tara's pretty terrible.
Terminus.
Oh,
I
you
think.
Mean the photo? The photo
ones,
cover.
Yeah,
ones.
They were
oh.
really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad move. There were some good ones, but it's funny. Andrew Skillitoo, I think, is an amazing artist. And you look at something like, I don't know, The Gunfighters, and it's a stunning piece of work. And then you look at some of his other work, and you think, ooh, what happened there?
Hmm.
And I suppose, like all artists, I suppose they have their good days and their bad days. They have the days when they're into it and the day where it just isn't flying for them.
Then how much was it paying anyway, when there could have been more, you know, you got a big project on, some, you know, maybe some sort of advertising contract.
Yeah.
And then you've got to squeeze in a Doctor Who book cover. You're maybe doing it at like 10:30 at night, right? You know.
Yeah, we've all done it where you just take on too much work and one project just slips. And I guess, you know, the Androids of Tara definitely slipped, but no, there were some absolutely beautiful artwork covers. You know, the Gunfighters always sticks out for me as being a real masterful piece from Skillitoo. And the Crotons, actually, the Crotons another goodie. I'm just trying to think through them now. I mean, there were some great ones. The one that really disappointed me that we never got. Because those bloody stupid photo covers, is we never got Earthshock until I think they reissued it in the 90s with
an
Alistair Pearson cover.
When they reissued
which
them
was lovely.
Blue Spines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some. When they got them right, I mean, it's funny, the ones that are still iconic today are still brilliant. Jeff Cummins, another, you know, his cover for Fang Rock, brilliant. His Face of Evil cover, brilliant. They were outrageously evocative. And it's like, I don't know if you pop into the Vought Vought group from time to time, but there was an absolute thrill, a ripple of excitement when the son of the guy who did all the Weetabix cards in the
70s, yes, I saw that, yeah.
Gordon Archer, popped in. And the outpouring of love for the guy's art and people from all walks of life coming and saying this art was stunning. It was and what they all said, which was right, and I'm thinking back to the Target books, it was the gateway to the past, because there were no magazines, there was no internet. You know, if you wanted to know what an Axon looked like, you pretty much depended on a Weetabix card in the 70s to tell you, because there was no other way of knowing.
Strange.
So yeah,
days.
Art's important. So I'm really pleased that the Lethbridge Stewart range, I've got Adrian involved, and I hope he stays involved for a long time, because it'll give that whole range a real boost.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, I'm looking forward to reading all of them, to be honest with you. That was the first book review I did in ages on Casterbus myself, was the first one, The Forgotten Son, which is a really good read.
Is that any good?
Yeah, it's really
it
good.
Myself.
Yeah, it is. I was very pleased with it. Because often with books, and certainly, you know, the Doctor Who range for me, because there's essentially, on the official side of things, there's two Doctor Who ranges, really. There's the kind of the series ranges, which they, you know, they bring out sort of annually with three books, or sometimes twice annually with three books, based on the current Doctor.
Yeah.
And I find them to be just missing something that makes them exceptional. And then you've got the big hardbacks, where you've got these big success stories like...
Oh, the Prestige.
Yeah, the Prestige ones, like the Alistair Pearson one, is a fantastic. I think I've said that on many occasions to the reader, Harvest of Time, by big fan, by Alistair Reynolds, not Alistair Pearson, Alistair Reynolds.
Yeah.
And Gareth yeah. Roberts' adaptation of Sharda. They're brilliant books. It's a shame to me. I feel maybe there could be more like that.
Well, I think they're
filling in
all the gaps.
Like the, they feel like the 90s books.
Well, to my shame, I've not read any.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I've not read any of them, so I can't really comment. Although I'm told there's one that includes a Delgado Master, which instantly makes me think, okay, now that I wouldn't mind reading.
That's Harvest of Time.
Is it? Isn't it good?
It's really good, yeah. Best Doctor Who book I've read in years.
But do they get Delgado right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, spot on. They get the whole era right. Mm. It's fantastic.
Well,
hey, now listen.
Well, I suppose, yeah.
No, go
yeah.
on, go on, before we move on.
I was going to say, a little birdie tells me that you've got another fiction thread coming up.
Oh, yes, we have. Yes, we have. So, so a few weeks ago, listener, we had on Casterbus a series of five short stories based in the Doctor universe, but without the Doctor in. Coming up in a few weeks' time, we have a series of seven, which gives us the opportunity to use seven incarnations of the Master. And it's got the kind
oh,
of...
God.
Yeah, it's got the...
Who gets the snake one?
Well, is that an incarnation? I don't know. So it has this kind of overarching theme of Master Who, and we're putting the Master nice. In Doctor-esque situations. And seeing what he or she does. So
I love that.
Yeah, you
I
like
absolutely
that. Oh,
love
good.
That. I know what I would pitch to you, but I'm too lazy to write it.
Okay.
But you want it anyway.
Go on then.
I would do 70s Soviet Union. KGB have a mirror organization to UNIT, and they have the Master who they've captured as their scientific advisor.
Ah.
Which is a bit more like a sort of Hannibal Lecter locked up in a cage in a gulag, and they go and consult him.
It's a bit Russian Life on Mars as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a dub or subtitled version of that?
What, a dub of
the
Life
Russian,
on Mars?
The Russian Life on Mars. Because there's a Russian version. There's a Russian.
I know there was a German one. There's a German one where he wakes up on the other side of the Berlin Wall.
Was it German? I thought it was Russian.
German. I think it's German where he wakes up on the other side of the Berlin Wall, which is amazing. I mean, it's the best.
Have you seen it?
But I've never seen it.
Oh, right.
No,
okay.
I love the idea.
No, I'm pressing the wrong buttons now. Okay. I thought it was Russian for some reason. But either way, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, there's lots of fun to be had with the Master. He's a brilliant character. Well, or she, or you know, it's you know, non-gender.
If we're going, for the snake version, it. Got everything covered there.
Yeah, the snake version could be fun, I suppose. It's a sort of I suppose the snake version actually could be quite good, because the snake version is a sort of essence that's hopping from person to person. Snake would be good.
Right, I've just looked that up because I had to, in the interest of precision and accuracy. The Dark Side of the Moon is a Russian adaptation of Life on Mars.
Ah, okay. So it's Russian.
Yeah, there's a trailer on YouTube. I'm not going to play it because I suspect we won't be able to understand a word of it.
No.
But I would love to see that. Just because I find that era that Russian, you know, that era of sort of struggling along with valves and bits of wood era of Russian day-to-day life seems so fascinating.
Well, if the rumours are right, that's Toby Whithouse's two-parter set in 60s Russia.
Really? That will be interesting. Yeah,
so I'm told.
Ah.
So our dream may come true.
Indeed.
You know, lots of stout chaps with valves.
Now, obviously I've mentioned earlier that there's going to be a big announcement, and there has been some releases of Doctor Who facts and episode titles and that sort of thing. I'm not going to go too much into this because there's a lot to read and there's a lot to talk about. And firstly, you know, we've been podcasting for 40 minutes nearly. And also, you know, it's all stuff that you can really read about rather than talk about. And it's a lot for us to digest at the moment as well.
Yeah.
But have you read about any of this stuff yet?
Yeah, I've skimmed it.
Does anything stand out to you?
Well, the Capaldi alone episode sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds, you know, really, you know, because we know Capaldi is an actor with real boots. He'll be terrific. That looks good. I'm not entirely grabbed by the found footage idea, if I'm being honest. That feels a bit 10 years too late.
Yeah, yeah.
But I could be wrong. It could be done with style. I'm trying to think. I have a strange feeling that the Zygon one is going to end up being the standout. Having spoken to some people, they're all saying that actually that's a lot better than you would expect. So that might be good. There's very little in there, to be honest, isn't there? I mean, it's all sort of wisps and, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to guess that we're going back to Skaro in the opening too, because it's there in the trailer, you know, the Skaro Dalek City that looks like my washing up drying rack in the kitchen is there in it, all its glory. So, I mean, whether that's exciting, I don't know.
You've got some of those Middle Eastern smoking devices for your washing up rack to look like that.
Well, that's my colander, you cheeky swine.
Okay. Right.
That's my colander, you know, yeah.
Right, now we were talking about the Art of Doctor Who earlier in regards to covers.
Lovely.
Now, I thought I'd give a quick mention to Colin Brockhurst's latest project, The Changing Face of Doctor Who.
Yes, yes.
Your
characteristically genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I like about this is obviously not that it's just got his usual high-quality work and his attention to detail. I think that the potential for debate and the what-ifs in terms of the doctors he's chosen is brilliant. And what's brilliant is that they are by no means the doctors, some of the doctors that I would have chosen, but I think he's done them well, and by doing them and making some provocative choices in there, I think debate is great and it's endless, and I can't wait to see a set myself.
That Peter Cushing Master's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, that one's great. But my favourite is Richard O'Brien, who I always think should have been the Doctor, because he was more or less playing the Doctor in the Crystal Maze. He even got the costume right. You know, he showed Colin Baker how bad taste with style can be done. As opposed to looking like Coco the Clown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, it's a great set, and it's done with style. And as I say, I'm not sure I would have picked all of them, but I think the beauty is that I wouldn't have picked all of them Ergo, the debate continues.
Okay. Yeah, so that's available, dear listener, for £24.99, £2.80 shipping. There's no profit involved. It just gets ploughed into producing the next project.
Correct, correct. And Colin has also promised he'll be working on Vault Warp 3 next. So we'll see. We'll see. We do still chat about it. I say, it is that Indiana Jones film that Lucas and Spielberg kept talking about, but could never quite fit it in because we are both busy people doing our own things. But it's still there. It's not going anywhere. Lee Sullivan is also picking up his easel again and working on the last Ron Turner Dalek strip at the end of the year because he got inconveniently put onto the entire Rivers of London run, which has taken up the past 9 months. So a lot of the people we work with are talented but busy. So we fit in. We do fit in, but it's coming.
Good, 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 good. We all look forward to that. Listen, speaking of Doctor Who comics, are you aware of Doctor Who comic? This is the Titan reprints.
Oh no! Right. What are they reprinting?
Their own stuff. So we have this ridiculous situation, don't we? That
Titan
publish their own stuff, send it to America, and then republish it.
Yes. Yes. Well, we've come a long way from Marvel UK having the exclusive worldwide right and then the exclusive UK rights. But that's where Titan started, of course. Titan started doing British-sized reprints of Dark Horse's stuff and the Simpsons comics and all sorts of things. Hmm. Back in the early 90s. So I guess they're just staying true to their model. And I've no idea how well it sells, or I haven't seen it in the shops.
Well, it's often found in W.H. Smith and supermarkets.
There you go. So it's for the youths.
Yeah, indeed. Well, basically it's £4.99. So you're going to save a bit of cash on, you know, buying three. Because it compiles the 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctor Adventures from Titan into one handy magazine of running to, you know, I don't know how many pages because they're actually
I must ask because I'm a bit of an old fart when it comes to these things. Well, actually, no, I'm a modern old fart in that I don't tend to buy physical comics anymore because I don't have the space.
Sure.
I buy the electronic copies.
Yeah.
Which I find quite convenient.
Well, I have these sent to me. I'm in complete agreement with you. I get 2000 AD online. Yeah. I don't buy it, but I get it online.
I don't have the room.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not very organised, so storing all these things in order so you can get to the things that you need, it's not really me anymore. Although back in the 90s, I did used to put my cherished Doctor Who magazines in binders in order with little notes on the things to get to.
Bless.
But you know that was. That was my internet.
Yeah.
That was my own little private Doctor Who internet back in the late 80s, early 90s. What I was going to ask is, are the comics any good? Because
I read
the DWM strip, but they've never appealed to me because I tried the IDW strips and they didn't really agree with me. I felt that they were being written for an American audience and not for me. And two, I never felt the characters went anywhere because they couldn't. And this is a problem that the Panini strip has, except in gap years, in that the strip, because it's now slave to the show, it can't go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it can't really go many places. It can only move in increments. And I've got a feeling, well, I got this from the IDW. I might be impugning Titan unfairly here. I got a feeling that the problem with you know, your 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th Doctor, War Doctor comic. Well, maybe the War Doctor can go different places, but all the others are just a bit locked in.
Well, certainly with the Titan ones, because you've got two new companions for 10 and 11. They've each got a new companion. So you have that.
So you can kill them.
You can kill them if you wanted to, yeah, exactly. But yeah, so they have an opportunity for taking a different direction. And I think it probably shows. I think they're probably the better comics than the 12th Doctor one, from what I've seen so far.
Okay.
So I do think there's an improvement over IDW, though, definitely.
Oh, well, that's good. And what would you say the range highlights, old chap, if I was going to actually get hold of a copy? What would you send me to read?
There's the 11th Doctor serial that's finished recently, whose name completely escapes me. That one. It's about the majority of the first
that's
year.
That's a highlight.
Yeah, yeah. I forgotten its name. Sorry. I do a lot of reading, so sorry.
It'll be in the show.
Whoever
it'll be in
wrote
the show.
That. Yeah.
Are there any old monsters, unexpected old monsters in interesting situations?
I'm not telling you.
Oh.
You'll have to find out for yourself.
But is there a yes?
Might be.
There might be. No. Okay. How mysterious.
Yes, indeed. See,
we get no privileges here at Unit HQ. We're just expected to keep the kettle on and listen on bended knee for our intrepid explorers to return. And when they tell us, oh, well, you'll have to find out for yourself. Well, that's not good enough.
They do tend to be largely original,
corridors,
borrowing from the TV series in conservative amounts. So, I'll leave it there. Hey, do you know what? Now, what we usually do this time of day, we usually eat our lunch. We usually, when we're doing the podcast, when we get to, around 45, 50 minutes through, as, we are now, we kind of do recommendations. And Gareth...
It is that time already, yeah.
Do you have anything that you would like to recommend to our listener?
Well, if we were doing this in a day's time, I would possibly be able to recommend the much derided Pixels, because I'm off to the pictures this afternoon to go see Pixels.
Right.
Which seems to have been roundly slagged by everyone with a keyboard in the Western Hemisphere, apart from Harry off Ain't It Cool, who one suspects is perhaps not as incisive with his reviews as he used to be, because he seems to have also enjoyed the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very mysterious... that was great. As appears to often happen with lots of things. Maybe he did just enjoy it, who knows. So I've got Pixels to come, so I can't recommend that yet. But
maybe he was drunk.
So what have I got to recommend? It's not Doctor Who, but I've been... I've recently joined the Netflix revolution.
Oh, good man.
Well, being dead tight, I always felt that I wasn't willing to pay that $5.99. But what I did was I rang up my service provider at Virgin and went through my package and found I had a phone package that I wasn't even using that I was paying £5 a month for. So I cancelled everything else. And I cancelled that. I was able to cancel all the channels because Horror is now on Terrestrial.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, actually, there's nothing else left. So with the spare money, I bought Netflix, and it's ace. And I can recommend off that an amazing documentary called Game Over, Atari Game Over.
Right.
Which looks at the collapse of Atari in 1983 in the video games market and is an excavation of a dump
the
in
game.
New Mexico. Yeah, where they dump DC and all the other games.
Is that
and
Netflix?
That's on
right.
Netflix, it's ace.
That's I've also been sorted out.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I've also been roundly addicted to Prison Break, which is on Netflix, which is ace. And it is really good fun. It starts quite gritty, and now I'm in series 4, and it's really slightly ridiculous. A little bit Ocean's 11. But I like it, so I can recommend that.
Okay, good recommendations.
And Doctor Who-wise, I'm trying to think what I've been watching lately, or reading. Doctor Who-wise. You give some recommendations, and I'll...
I'm actually also been watching Netflix. I've got a similar story to you, which I did regale the listeners with a few weeks ago, but I will quickly recap, is that I got rid of Virgin Media... and switched to Sky Broadband. because it's free for a year. It's free for 12 months. And although it's not as fast, I wasn't getting... You say the dark side. But the thing is, Virgin... I mean, I don't trust Richard Branson any more than I trust Rupert Murdoch, quite frankly.
Well, I don't think he owns it anymore, Richard. Well, I think it's owned by another shadowy billionaire.
Well, there you go.
But one without a grin, a beard, and a private tropical island.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. But basically, you know, I was supposed to be getting 75 or 100 megabits or whatever it was a second, and I was getting nothing like that. I was getting probably half that. And I thought, why the hell am I paying all this money for this? And then I'm getting all these channels, most of which we don't watch, and the ones we do watch, we can get for free anyway. And the ones that we do pay for and do watch, we're getting through Now TV.
Now TV.
Yeah, it's
a canny little box.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I have the app from my phone, and then I send it to the Apple TV or to the Chromecast, which is basically works in the same way as your box. So, you know, for Game of Thrones, we've got Sky Atlantic on there. That's pretty much all we need to do. So I got rid of Virgin Media, moved to Sky Broadband, which I'm getting free for 12 months. Which is, you know, unbeatable. And so I renewed my Netflix, which I'd had dormant for a few months. And I've just started watching two things. Merlin, from the beginning, because we didn't watch it properly when it was first on. We kind of dipping in and out.
My mother swears by Merlin. She loved Merlin.
Right.
I never really got into it, but is it good?
Yeah, it's not bad. It starts off quite well.
Yeah.
And obviously it's got, it's got John Hurt in as the voice of the dragon. So there's your Doctor Who connection.
Oh, yes, I did get that. Yeah, that was
if
nice.
Colin Morgan, yeah. Anthony Head and Richard Wilson weren't enough Doctor Who connections for you, there's John Hurt. And Eve Miles is in the first episode as well. And I suspect... Oh, and Angel Colby, who was in The Girl in the Fireplace, she's also in it as well. And that's just the first episode.
Nice.
Merlin, okay. We started watching, so I've enjoyed the first episode. We've also gone back to the beginning of Death in Paradise, which I find is the strangest programme in that it seems to have got better since Ben Miller left. And I thought...
Really?
Yeah, I feel it has, yeah. And I thought it was really good to start with. And, you know, when Chris Marshall took over... with the third and fourth series, and I suspect the fifth, they haven't said anything otherwise. His storyline does seem to be a bit slower, especially since Sarah Martin's left. But going back to the beginning with Death in Paradise is really good, because you see Ben Miller thrown straight, you know, the whole fish out of water scenario, which is actually done originally for the first time in, I don't know, 20 years or whatever. And it's got a good ensemble cast, and it's enjoyable. So and then you also get to see, the various stars of the week, who you can pick out as clearly having had a bit of fun in the Caribbean for a month. Say that again.
I do like a star of the week.
Yeah, they have two or three on Death in Paradise. It's like Midsummer Murders. You look out for the star.
And think, nice.
That's a good pick for the murderer, that one.
Mm. So, or the victim. That's or the high-profile victim.
Say that again, sorry.
Or the high-profile victim.
Oh, the whole profile victim, yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, with Death in Paradise as well, the person who gets murdered, they've got the month off, haven't they? Because, you know, they turned up one morning to film the death scene, or maybe one evening, and then they just hang around in case they need reshoots or whatever.
Yeah.
And everyone else has to do all the acting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fair play to them, I say. So, do you have a .2 recommendation?
I do. I have... recommendation, and I have a couple of tangential ones.
Okay.
Actually, my Doctor Who recommendation is Destiny of the Daleks.
Oh.
Which is one that I found myself watching the other week while I was scrabbling around, because I'd enjoyed Revelation of the Daleks hugely, because my brother had watched it. My brother's just found Twitter, so he only follows about three people. And I'm one of them. And occasionally, after one suspects he's had a couple of foaming treats, he'll send a couple of tweets as to what he's been watching. And he's been watching... because he used to watch Revelation Daleks and all those 80s Doctor Who with me when we were kids. And he quite likes them. And he found Revelation of the Daleks... In fact, you know what? I'm not going to recommend Destiny of the Daleks. I'm going to talk about Revelation Daleks.
Okay.
Scrap that. And I'm watching it through his... his tweets and his eyes was brilliant. And he basically said, loved it, thought the Doctor was a bit shady, offering to shake Davros's hand after they'd blown his fingers off. Loved Orsini, loved the stinking Squire, and loved Mr. Jobelt, especially when his wig dropped off. And I think that is probably the best summary of Revelation of the Daleks I've ever heard. So, if you want to watch a true masterpiece of the 80s, which doesn't have the it has the Doctor in for about probably about 15 minutes in total, get it. The other thing about Revelation of the Daleks, which I didn't realise and I'd forgotten about until I watched it, but JNT was insane enough to offer Sir Laurence Olivier, Sir Larry, the part of the mutant tramp in the beginning, who fights with Colin Baker and rolls around in the snow with him before Perry knocks him on the head and kills him. Now, I'm not being, you know, having heard on the grapevine that he had expressed the desire to do a small cameo appearance in Doctor Who, you don't offer Sir Larry the part of a tramp in the snow. I'm not sure what you'd offered him in Revelation of the Daleks. You'd have he wouldn't have done the DJ justice. So maybe the answer is there would have been a part. I'll tell you what he would have been great as, though. Mayan Tacker in Tamlash. Because Joe's already playing him as Richard III. Is the winter of our discontent, all that.
Yeah.
Sir Larry as the Mayan, that is the missed opportunity. And I bet Tamlash would be so much better thought of if we had Sir Larry as the Mayan.
I personally think Darrow's performance is extremely enjoyable. I like watching Paul Darrow in virtually everything that he does.
Oh, he's great. If you can't get Sir Larry, then Darrow is by no means the pound shop alternative.
No, absolutely.
He's a master.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, they would be. Yeah, so Revelation of the Daleks as referenced by my brother.
Okay.
The top choice for stinking squires, overweight men with badly fitting toupees, and Davros with no fingers being tastelessly offered the hand of friend. 80s Who in a microcosm.
Excellent. And that, dear listener, brings us squarely to the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. Thank you, Gareth Cavanagh, for joining us. My pleasure. Thank you again. We'll be back next time with some more Doctor Who chat and news and discussion and all that kind of usual thing, which you probably heard before, listener, but in a different way.
And your posh lardy-da friends who'll have returned from holiday with a nice tan.
Yes, and that as well. Until next time, it's goodbye. There's supposed to be a theme tune here. Oh, there it is. You know, years ago, we used to do the podcast theme tune on my guitar.
Oh, stylish.
Not really, no, it was terrible.